It is Wednesday, May 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the capital of Afghanistan is rocked by a deadly bomb attack.
This appears to be the deadliest ever bomb explosion that has struck the Afghan capital.
The United Nations Security Council is told Yemen is approaching collapse, and singer Miley Cyrus joins an all-star lineup at a concert to help the victims of the Manchester bombing. It's all ahead. A massive truck bomb exploded Wednesday in the diplomatic section of Afghanistan's capital, killing at least 90 people and wounding more than 300 others. The bomb ripped through the central Wazir Akbar Khan area of Kabul, home to foreign diplomatic missions and government offices, damaging dozens of vehicles and surrounding buildings. Afghan officials said the explosives were packed in a sewage tanker. I spoke to reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad about the Kabul bombing.
Well, this appears to be the deadliest ever bomb explosion that has struck the Afghan capital, because the kind of devastation it has caused is really huge. This is the first time that, in addition to civilian buildings and civilians themselves, a number of foreign diplomatic missions in the city have been badly damaged. And the crater, you know, that this massive bomb has left behind is like 8 feet deep and 14 feet diameter. It's huge. But again, it is raising questions that how come in such a secure area of the capital, where mostly diplomatic missions are located, such a large quantity of explosives was packed in a sewage tanker, and this bomber was able to drive it so close to the area, especially close to the German embassy.
Well, the location of the bombing, you know, seems to indicate that this was aimed at the international presence there in Kabul.
Well, again, as of this moment, it is really not clear whether the aim was the diplomatic, the foreign missions, or some government buildings, and particularly this office of the of Roshan, which is the telecommunication service facility run by the Aga Khan. And, you know, that is raising some suspicions that it could be the work of those who are loyal to Islamic State in the country, because they have been going after Shiites in this region or wherever they are operating. So it is still really not clear, because the way it was exploded, it was on a main road, and you have on one side diplomatic missions and on the other you have government offices and private buildings. So either it was just meant to create terror in a real sense, or it could have been aimed at international facilities in the capital, but that we still are waiting for the investigation to be over, so at least Afghan authorities are able to determine what was the purpose of this massive attack. Because the confusion that is surrounding this whole episode is that so far there has been no claims of responsibility.
And apparently the Taliban has denied involvement in this.
Yes, that is interesting, that they immediately after the bombing, they issued a detailed statement saying the insurgency has nothing to do with this and that they condemn any attacks on civilian targets. But it is very difficult to really say whether the Taliban is telling the truth, because it has been happening over the years that whenever there is a massive bomb that is targeted maybe at a particular installation, but when it causes or it caused collateral damage, the Taliban would distance itself from this kind of attack, because obviously it has outraged and angered many in Afghanistan, because the kind of footage the television in that country were broadcasting today, that clearly showed that people are so angry and they are now demanding the government step down, because the presidential palace is also not far away from this area where this bomb exploded. So again, the question is, how come in such a secure area, Afghan forces were not able to stop it from entering into the Wazir Akbar Khan area, which is very popular, you know, because not only that there are diplomatic missions in this area, but rich Afghans are also living in this area. This is a posh locality. And all these Afghans, these powerful rich Afghans, they have their private guards, and it is very difficult to penetrate to all these security check posts that lead you to this posh area. So, yeah, there are going to be a number of questions that will be asked, that if the government and if Afghan security forces are not able to prevent this kind of an act in the city, in the capital city, then obviously whatever is happening around Kabul, elsewhere in Afghanistan, so many devastating attacks against Afghan security forces, that is now obviously putting more pressure on Afghanistan's foreign backers, particularly the United States, on what to do next to really bring an end to this increasingly devastating conflict in Afghanistan.
That's Ayaz Gul reporting for VOA from Islamabad, Pakistan. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, Paris Accord, Paris Climate Agreement, hashtag Paris Agreement, all trending with the announcement that President Trump is going to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Accord, which is designed to lower greenhouse gas emissions and work to limit the increase in global temperatures. So this has created a lot of discussion on social media. Lots of people upset that the U.S. isn't a leader on environmental policy, and this won't just set the world back. They won't just set the United States back, they say, but the world as well. And other people saying, however, it's a needless, useless regulation. Many people saying they don't believe in climate change or global warming. So what's the point of having this if it doesn't exist? The interesting split that a lot of people are talking about is within the Trump administration, you're seeing people like Ivanka Trump or Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in favor of the U.S. staying part of this accord, and others like Environmental Protection Agency Chief Scott Pruitt in favor of leaving. So a bit of a split even within the Trump administration. And many people noting that the two eligible countries who have not signed the agreement are Nicaragua and Syria, and now the U.S. is going to be removed from that. Many people saying, too, that even North Korea has approved the deal. So lots of talk about this. We'll see how that develops in the coming days and weeks. And then this bizarre tweet from President Trump late last night where he wrote, despite the constant negative press, COVFEE, it is not a word. It has become a word now that he has wrote it. People using it across social media. It's been used over a million times in the past 12 hours since he tweeted it. Then Trump tweeted out and said, who can figure out the true meaning of COVFEE? Enjoy. Very bizarre statement, rather than saying it was a spelling error or this is what it means, encouraging people to guess. So people are saying it, maybe he meant something like coffee. People joking as in prescription drug commercials saying, ask your doctor if COVFEE is right for you. People not even sure how to pronounce this word, if that's the correct pronunciation. But while people are talking about how bizarre it is that there hasn't been any statement about this, some people are seeing a more maybe deceptive reasoning behind that, saying that it might be actually a distraction from President Trump's announcement that he's pulling the U.S. from the Paris Accord, that people are more focused on this than on other serious issues. If so, perhaps it didn't work because people are talking, as we talked about the Paris Accord as well. But no answers yet on what COVFEE means.
All right, we'll have to wait and see. Yes. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Trump assails the congressional probes of his campaign's links to Russia. NASA announces an intention to fly a spaceship into the sun. The USS Vinson and USS Reagan carrier strike groups conduct dual exercises in the Sea of Japan, and a man with weapons and ammunition is arrested at President Trump's Washington hotel. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Most scientists believe that land-based creatures first evolved from marine species. A new study from researchers at the UK's University of Portsmouth provides new insight into how these creatures spread across the land once they emerged from their ocean environment. The study is claimed to be the first to use trace fossils, which are impressions of animal footprints or burrows, to illustrate such a significant evolutionary step. The initial evolutionary movement is said to have taken place throughout the world, first in areas that are close to both water and land, and then later, when the creatures moved farther out from the ocean, to areas such as floodplains, rivers, deserts, and lakes. The study suggests only a handful of marine species made the initial move from water to land, such as spiders evolving from their crab ancestors and squid and cuttlefish evolving into slugs and snails. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the World Health Organization calls on governments to take aim against tobacco. The UN Security Council was warned this week that Yemen, engulfed in war and its people suffering from famine and disease, is spiraling toward collapse. Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs Stephen O'Brien said the people of Yemen are being subjected to deprivation, disease, and death as the world watches. He said the unfolding calamity is the direct result of the actions of the parties and supporters of the conflict and inaction by the international community.
Yemen now has the ignominy of being the world's largest food security crisis, with more than 17 million people who are food insecure, 6.8 million of whom are one step away from famine. Crisis is not coming, it is not even looming. It is here today, on our watch, and ordinary people are paying the price. What is worse, the threat of famine is driven and exacerbated by conflict. Yemen is not facing a drought. If there was no conflict in Yemen, there would be no descent into famine, misery, disease, and death. A famine would certainly be avoidable and averted.
Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal, in an interview with International Edition's Victor Beatty, was asked why the international community has shown so little interest in solving the conflict.
The reason is very simple and straightforward. Yemen is not strategically important anymore. If there is a conflict, say, between the East and the West, in this case, between Iran on one side and the Saudis and the supporters on the other side, basically both sides have failed Yemen. And that being the case, they've just left it alone to fester. And no supporters of these two countries or these two powers in the region are willing to step in and do anything about it because their vested interests are not affected.
The UN envoy to Yemen, Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed, also told the council that serious negotiations between the Houthi rebels and the government coalition headed by Saudi Arabia on the first steps to a cessation of hostilities have been slow, and the key parties are reluctant to even discuss concessions needed for peace. Why?
Look, there is no cost involved. I mean, if there were a cost involved in this, yes, then once you have made an agreement, you fulfill it and implement it. But as you can see, there is no cost to the Saudis and their partners. And for the same reason, there is no cost to the other side, which is supporting the rebels or whatever the Houthis you may call them. The point really is, this is one of those unbelievable cases where for vested interests, a proxy war was started. And then the actors in that proxy war are not willing to, quote-unquote, even do the minimum that is needed for the destruction that has taken place and fix it. And that entirely is because Yemen has ceased to be a critical strategic asset anymore.
What is the key to peace?
None. As you can see, it will be total exhaustion.
Saudi Deputy Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who serves as defense minister and is second in line to the throne, said Saudi forces, which intervened more than 2 years ago, could crush the Houthi rebels in a few days, but that could kill thousands of Saudi troops and Yemeni civilians. Instead, he told Saudi-owned satellite networks his coalition is waiting for the rebels to tire out. Time is in our favor, he said. The United Nations warns more than 7 million people die prematurely every year from tobacco-related causes, and that tobacco is also a costly drain on national economies. The World Health Organization is urging governments to implement strong tobacco control measures for the health of their people and economies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization calls tobacco a threat to development. Besides killing millions of people annually, WHO says tobacco costs the world economy $1.4 trillion a year, or 1.8% of gross domestic product. Andrew Black is with the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control Secretariat. He says millions of people who smoke suffer from a wide range of tobacco-related diseases and morbidity, including blindness, amputation, impotence, and poor oral health. He says by 2030, around 80% of the world's tobacco-related mortality will be in low- and middle-income countries.
High rates of tobacco use being promoted by aggressive strategies from the tobacco industry are projected to lead to a doubling of the number of tobacco-related deaths in low- and middle-income countries between 2010 and 2030.
For the first time ever, WHO and the UN Development Program have released a report showing the impact of tobacco on the environment. Vinayak Prasad, the program manager of the Tobacco Free Initiative, says the data reveals some disturbing results.
Evidence is really astounding as to how tobacco is extremely dangerous and harming the environment, causing deforestation and a lot of other challenges.
For example, the report notes tobacco waste contains more than 7,000 toxic chemicals that poison the environment, including carcinogens. It notes cigarette butts account for 30 to 40% of all items collected in coastal and urban cleanups. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. The publicist for U.S. pop singer Ariana Grande says she will perform a benefit concert in Manchester for victims of last week's deadly bomb attack in the city. The One Love Manchester show, to be held Sunday at the city's Old Trafford Cricket Ground, will also feature artists Justin Bieber, Katy Perry, and others. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with more on one of the performers, who happens to be a close friend of Ariana Grande.
Today, our subject will be a young singer who became a sensation as Hannah Montana on the Disney Channel and then launched a very successful film and music career afterwards. And her real name is Miley Cyrus. Actually, it's Destiny Hope Cyrus. That's her real name. But she's known around the world as Miley Cyrus. And she's got a brand new song. It's been a few years since her last song. But the new song is a total change. She's kind of gone very back to the beginning of her Hannah Montana sound. It's much softer, much sweeter than the edgier Wrecking Ball that she released in 2013. The new one is called Malibu. So let's check it out.
I never came to the beach. I stood by the ocean. I never sat by the shore under the sun with my feet in the sand. But you brought me here, and I'm happy that you did.
All right, Larry. Well, Miley Cyrus, she was a subject of a lot of controversy a few years ago. I'm thinking the twerking incident.
Yes. Well, it wasn't necessarily that it was Miley. It was the twerking itself that became controversial. She just happened to be the twerker. But since that time, she's gotten romantically involved with a very famous Australian actor, Liam Hemsworth. And they were engaged several years ago. They called it off for a little while. They're back on. They're engaged again. In fact, Miley credits Liam for her transformation. She says the song Malibu is all about her relationship and her love for him. And she's become a new person. She hasn't smoked in a few months. She has given up alcohol. She's given up all of those vices that she had before and found a new path. Now, whether she can stay on the path or not, well, only time will tell. But he's had a very positive effect on her.
And I believe she tweeted soon after the Manchester bombing. She's friends with Ariana Grande and talked about how upset she was.
Yes, every artist, whether they're friends with Ariana or not, has been affected by and touched by the tragedy that occurred at the Manchester Arena during Ariana's show. Ariana herself tweeted out, broken. Now Ariana's working on raising money to pay for the funerals of the families that lost their loved ones, 22 victims. She's going to do a fundraising show to help those people out who were affected tragically by that event. But yeah, Miley's friends with Ariana. Miley's friends with a lot of people, and she's loved by everybody. She performed in New York City last week, one of those freebies on the plaza, and it was packed. And she's been a great role model. She kind of, like I say, went off the path for a little while. Got a little wild side, but she's back.
What about her dad, Billy Ray Cyrus?
He's there right beside her, supporting her all the way. He's probably very tired of singing Achy Breaky Heart by now. But, you know, he's doing well. The whole family is in show business. Miley's got another sister who's doing a TV show. She's got a younger sister who just turned 17, whose name is Noah Cyrus, who's releasing a new album called NC17. And so, yeah, I mean, the whole family's very talented, and they're in showbiz in one way or another.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
But here I am next to you. The sky is more blue in Malibu.
And the music of Miley Cyrus brings an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From time to time, the United States identifies certain individuals as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. In all cases, these are people who have committed or are deemed to pose a significant risk of committing acts of terrorism. When such an individual is identified, the U.S. government places that person's name on the specially designated nationals list. His assets within U.S. reach are immediately frozen, and he is locked out of the global financial network. No U.S. citizen or company may conduct business with a designated individual. On May 19th, Hashem Safieddine and Muhammad al-Isawi were named as specially designated global terrorists by the U.S. Department of State under Executive Order 13224. At the same time, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia designated Safieddine under its Law of Terrorism Crimes and Financing and Royal Decree A-44. Hashem Safieddine is a top leader of Hezbollah, an Iran-supported foreign terrorist organization and specially designated global terrorist entity that has been responsible for dozens of major terror attacks over the past four decades. Safieddine is a key member of Hezbollah's Executive Council, which oversees Hezbollah's political, organizational, social, and educational activities. Muhammad al-Isawi is a leader of the Sinai affiliate of ISIS. Better known as Abu Usama al-Masri, he was this terrorist group's media spokesman, but assumed the leadership position after the death in August 2016 of Abu Duwa al-Ansari. The group he leads today, once known as Ansar Bayat al-Maqdis, was designated as a foreign terrorist group in 2014. This designation was updated a year later to reflect the group's affiliation with ISIS. The designations of Hashem Safieddine and Muhammad al-Isawi served to notify the U.S. public as well as the international community that these two men pose a serious risk of committing acts of terrorism. At the same time, the action against Safiyuddin is the latest example of the strong partnership between the United States and Saudi Arabia in combating the financing of terrorism. The Safiyuddin designation is also consistent with the U.S. government's ongoing effort to expose and apply pressure against the actions of Hezbollah.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.